Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Michael Hawley as my special expert guest. Michael Hawley has been working the stages of Las Vegas since 1987 and around the world as a juggler and comedian. He was born and raised in Orange County, California, and earned a degree in psychology and theater at UC Irvine in high school. And at UC Irvine, he was a pole vaulter and now coaches high school pole vaulters at a local Las Vegas high school. One of his pet projects is his Secrets of the Champions website, which records the daily practices of great athletes to show young people that champions are not born with it, but become great through intelligent and disciplined practice. Michael volunteers for the Boy Scouts and does regular shows for charitable causes throughout Las Vegas. A lifelong teacher, he studies the process of learning to help his athletes and is always looking for new insights into how to motivate and focus his athletes and other students. Good morning, Michael, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Thanks, Corey. Great to be with you.
So tell us about Las Vegas. What's it like right now? What's the weather like? Because up here in Canada, you know, we're still trying to pull ourselves out of the winter. I'm sure it's hot and warm down there.
Well, I have nothing to complain about, really, compared with the weather up there in Canada. But right now, it's variable here. It's our couple of weeks or maybe a month and a half of what we consider workable weather between what we relatively call very cold weather down here. And we won't complain too much. And then the heat of the summertime, which gets up to about 110, 115 every day. So this is great weather, but it's always a challenge because every day we have to pay attention to what might be happening that day. Rain. Today we're supposed to have 40 mile an hour winds, which is really difficult for pole vaulters. And yesterday was 78 degrees. The day before was 55. So we have to keep on our toes and change our practice regimen depending upon what the weather is because our facilities are all outside here.
I just got back from LA and I was actually at UC Irvine. I was with my son. He was fighting at the Pan Am Jiu-Jitsu Games.
Yeah.
And I'd never been to UC Irvine, and what a beautiful campus with that circle and park in the middle. How was your experience studying there?
It was incredible. I really had a good time. I studied psychology for a number of years, and then I went off and took a little break and saw the street performers in New York City and thought, that looks like fun. So I started doing that. And I finally came back to UCI, finished my degree in psychology, but then got involved with the theater department and did dance and opera and improv comedy and started doing small juggling shows for the school festival there at UC Irvine. It was a great campus. The park in the middle was beautiful. That's where I did some of my first shows. And the theater department was really terrific, really ambitious with all the things they did. The opera that I did was a redoing of Verdi's La Forza del Destino, which hadn't been done since its debut when Verdi debuted it, you know, 100 years ago or whenever that was. So a very ambitious program with some incredible professors there. Really had a great time.
We also went to Venice, and of course, that's always fun, and there's a lot of street entertainers there. And so what you're saying is that a lot of these people like yourself who eventually become celebrities actually get their start doing this for free in front of the public?
Sure, I think so. You start wherever you can start. I have a best friend who's a magician, one of the best magicians in the world. And one of his friends posted a picture of him from maybe 35 years ago. It was black and white. My friend, whose name is David, was at a park someplace, and he had a T-shirt on that said Magician for Hire, and he had a little waiter stand there with some cards, and the caption underneath the picture was, "This is how David got started and what made him so great." Wherever there were people, you would find David Williamson, and he would be performing for free, for money, whatever, just to get the practice in and get in front of people so you could practice your discipline.
Right. Now, I've seen your show on YouTube. It's great. Very entertaining. I love juggling. I remember trying to learn how to juggle when I was a kid, and everybody probably gives it a shot, but I think a lot of people like it, and you mix the humor in, which is wonderful, and you can obviously see your athletic talent coming through. How do you eventually get a show? And do you have a contract with a hotel? Do you need an agent? Do you have to try and try and try? Like, how do you get to the point where you have a regular show like you do?
All of the above. There's always the route where you can send in your, it used to be a VHS tape or a DVD, or now YouTube links to producers and agents trying to get work. But I remember walking into several agents and producers' offices when I first started years ago and seeing stacked on the walls thousands of VHS tapes and DVDs, all of which had never been seen by the agents and the producers because they don't have time to see them. So a great number of people that finally do get jobs, it's from word of mouth. Somebody else sees you that knows somebody that's looking for a juggler or a magician or a comedian or some sort of act or a coach. You know, I don't know if you still throw the hammer or coach the hammer or both, but I work at this school right now coaching pole vault because my son went to a pole vault club of a guy that used to coach at this high school. And when he moved to a different high school, he picked me and he said, Michael, I'd like you to coach over there at Green Valley High School. Would you like to do it? And I said, absolutely. So a lot of it is word of mouth in Vegas and every kind of business. So that's how I got to work in Las Vegas initially. A friend of mine had a manager who called me when a show here in Las Vegas needed a comedy juggler. And so that's how I got in. I don't think I've ever gotten a job from publicity that I've sent out. It's always been some sort of word of mouth. In fact, the guy that I'm working for right now, the producer, called me back in 2002. I'd never worked for him before. He said, I'm starting this show. It's kind of a rush deal. I need acts. And everybody that I've talked to so far that's going to be in the show say, you need to get Michael Hawley to be in the show. So do you want to be in the show? And I said, sure, sounds great. Let's do it. He goes, cool. What do you do? And with that, that's a perfect example of just word of mouth. Somebody hears that you're a good act, and then they say, okay, come on in. And sometimes they don't even know exactly what you do.
Right. That's great insight. To answer your question, I do both, but by far my priority is to compete. I'm on the Canadian National Masters team.
Nice.
And we're going to Spain for the World Masters Championships in September. Yeah, I just love that event. I love the speed. I love the fact that I'm alone. I don't need anyone. As you know, I'm going to ask you about this too, about the pole vaulting. It's been said that the hammer is the most technical sport in track and field, with the exception possibly of the pole vault. Now, how do you feel about that? You think the pole vault is the most technically challenging compared to shot and discus and hammer and other events in track and field?
Well, I think those two are neck and neck. I have a friend whose son is a hammer thrower. He threw for Berkeley for 4 or 5 years, and I watched him a few times, and the speed with which you guys spin around there is just amazing. It's hard to comprehend how you can even pay attention to what's going on because you're just going so fast than letting that hammer go. It's amazing. I do love the pole vault because it has a lot of facets to it. You have to be as fast as a sprinter. You have to be as qualified as a gymnast, an Olympic gymnast, basically. And you have to be a little bit nuts. And the same applies to the hammer thrower. I can see a cartoon image happening with every hammer throw where you don't let go of the handle and off you go with the hammer. You know?
Right on.
I love the pole vault. I've been a scientist all my life. My dad was a scientist. And the kids sometimes yell at me because I'm reminding them of all the physics and math that they're encountering every time they pole vault, the Pythagorean theorem, calculus, you know, vectors, speed, equations of math. They say, Coach, we're done with school. We're pole vaulting now. And I tell them, no, this is a school motivator, your math class motivator, because you're actually doing all of those equations that you do in math. You're doing them right now. Same applies for juggling. When I teach juggling, I toss a ball up and I look at it and I catch it, and I don't look when I catch it. And I tell the people that I'm doing a workshop for, I just did calculus. Now, I can't consciously do calculus. I've tried a dozen times, and I still don't get it. But I know that my brain is doing calculus when I toss a ball up and catch it without looking at where it's landing, because I'm watching little spots on the arc of the ball as it travels and doing that equation of adding up all of those locations and times. And then my brain is doing the calculus in order to decide where that ball is going to end up. So it's complicated, it's beautiful, it's fun. And if you do it right, it looks absolutely simple.
Yes, and then that's true for all of the great performances out there, no matter what it is. That's just watching the Olympics and seeing the beauty and the synergism and the majesty of the art form performed. Now, I live in Vernon, which is the only desert in Canada. It's in the sort of the lower middle portion of British Columbia, if you know where that is.
I know where British Columbia is, yes.
Okay, right on. So we're about 4 or 5 hour drive inland from Vancouver, and this is where all the fruits in Canada are grown. Now, not too far from me is Kamloops, and that's another really hot, dry place. It's perfect for like track and field in the summer. But now Bondarchuk, who has a gold medal back in the 50s in the hammer, who taught Yuri Sadiq, kind of like my hero, who's got the world record, he actually is coaching in Kamloops. So the reason I'm bringing this up is because he can barely speak English. And if you go ask him or interact with him as a coach, he'll just look at you and he'll pick up a hammer, something like this, hammer, here, throw. And that's his whole strategy of coaching. Now, he'll watch you when you throw, and then he'll point out your faults right away. So tell us about your technique, how you find athletes and what you look for and how you help them make advancement in the performance.
Just to backtrack a pinch there, I have a fellow coach here from Hungary and he does the same thing. And some of my kids have gone over to him sometimes during the summer and I'll sit there and watch. I won't coach during that time because it's his time. And he'll say something to them and they'll look at me like, I didn't get any of that, you know, but they do excel with him. He's great. You know, he jumped far higher than I did. So back to your question, how do I pick people? First of all, I take all comers. You know, it's high school and I get a lot of freshmen through seniors, of course, but I get a lot of freshmen that are just coming out. They've never done track ever in their lives. In Nevada, unfortunately, the budget doesn't allow it. So this is their first experience with track generally, and definitely with pole vault. So they have no idea what it is. And maybe they've never even seen it before. But I will look for, when I go shopping, first of all, I shop for the cheerleaders because they're all gymnasts. And gymnasts, of course, have a huge head start on everybody else. You know, if I take a typical young boy or girl and say, okay, I want you to get up on this high bar and do some pull-ups and then do a pullover. And they'll try and maybe their arms will bend. And then you say the same thing to a gymnast and you go, well, and they'll say to you, how much time do you have? How many do you want? How many pull-ups, toe touches, pullovers, hip circles? We got all day. And they could do it all day. And so they have a huge advantage because of their strength. And secondly, because of their air sense. They know where their bodies are in the air. Now, I have one of my best boys right now, young kid, came to me last year. No fear whatsoever. Very fast, hugely strong, has no idea where his body is in space, which is, of course, very dangerous. And I used to shop for wrestlers because they're super strong. They couldn't run worth a darn, but they could get upside down on the pole very easily because they were so strong. Unfortunately, they may not be over the pit when they get upside down on the pole, which is very dangerous. So I shop for those kinds of people. You look for body types, hopefully height, strength. They should be fast. But then, like I say, I take all comers. I always have a couple of people that they can't tell you which foot is right and which foot is left. But I take them anyway because it's fun and it's challenging. And you learn as a coach, you learn a lot of things with those kind of absolute beginners that you can share with the more experienced people that sometimes you forget with the experienced people because they make progress more quickly. So I just look all the time. I'm always watching other athletes. The other coaches hate it too, because I might stop a runner or a high jumper or a long jumper or a basketball player and say, what are you doing? What event are you doing? I want you to come and pole vault. And so I look for those kinds of people. And I look for people that are excited about learning something new and are fairly disciplined. And that's a huge challenge in high school. Kids are so scatterbrained. They have a lot of issues that they're discovering for the first time. And nowadays, we have all these electronic devices that are constantly calling them. So that's a real challenge. But I shop for basically people that are gymnasts. And then I take whoever wants to play, and we work with them.
Right. I use some of the technology. Like, I have a little iPad, and I get someone to film me when I'm practicing, and of course at my competitions. And then I watch a lot of videos of the great athletes on YouTube, and there's a lot of coaching information there too. Do you advocate that? Do you do any filming and use some of the filming technology that is popular today?
All the time. Almost every practice, and definitely every single jump at every single meet. We use a thing called huddle technique, HUDL technique, and it allows you to video and then immediately watch it at various speeds, frame by frame, quarter speed, eighth speed, and stop it and slow it down backwards and forwards. You can draw on it. You can record an audio comment. You can type a comment. And then when I come home after every practice or meet, I will tag each video with the athlete's name and email it out to them. And when they watch it, it will send me a notification saying that they watched it. So then I know who's really interested and who isn't as interested. So we use that, and of course, YouTube is amazing. I was in high school and college in the early 70s, and we didn't have anything like that. So this is such a huge advantage for them to be able to see. They'll say, you know, I was getting my knees up, coach, and I say, well, I want you to get them up to your waist. Coach, I was getting my knees up to my waist. Okay, let's take a look. And then we show them on the video, they go, oh, wow. They're like at 45 degrees. They're not at 90 at all. So it's a huge advantage, and we use it all the time. It's great. I even have a new little projector that's about the size of a cell phone that projects full HD video, and it's battery operated. You put little videos on an SD card or USB, and it plugs into the back, and the battery lasts for about 2 or 3 hours. And so I can slip that into my equipment bag and project the video anywhere we go. So that's a real advantage too, to have the kids see the videos.
What are some of the trials and errors or pitfalls or challenges that are unique to pole vaulters? Think of the sprinters and their mentality, and then you've got the throwers, which often are separated, then even the individual throwers, shot, discus, javelin, hammer, and then pole vault. So is there anything peculiar to pole vaulting, the kind of mentality? I know that hammer throwers are a different breed. They're often loners and very isolated because the sport is so unpopular, relatively speaking. And here I'll tell 100 people, you know, they say, what event do you do? I'll do the hammer. And they go, what's that?
Right.
But they know exactly what a pole vault is, or a shot, or a disc, or a javelin. You know definitely what that is. So talk about the pole vault from that point of view.
Our first thing is safety, of course. You know, the kids are getting pretty high up there. So I have to be careful with them. A lot of the boys, as I mentioned before, are very aggressive, ambitious, and want to jump high and every day. But they often don't have the coordination and the air sense that the girls might, because the girls might have been doing gymnastics since they were 3 years old. So I have to be careful with them. I think they're a gutsy bunch, because like the hammer, when you're doing it full speed, you have to commit. You can't do the pole vault halfway. You have to be full speed, plant correctly, do the correct technique, and just go for it. Because if you stop halfway, then you don't land on that soft, cushy thing. You land on something hard, whether it be grass or the runway or some concrete that might be nearby. So you have to be gutsy. You have to just be a go-for-it kind of personality. And I've seen kids come that are kind of meek and have very little confidence. And when they get into that mind frame, their whole life changes because they have more confidence about being more aggressive and ambitious in whatever they do. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, for sure. Because I'm into the psychology of the mindset of each individual athlete and what it is they have to overcome and the personal challenges. And this is the great stuff brought out in Greek philosophy by Socrates and Plato and Aristotle, all of whom said gymnastics or weight training and training and exercise was absolutely critical for a lot of different reasons, which I'm sure you're well aware of. Now, I know with the hammer, like here in Vernon, we just had a $10 million beautiful track built. But before that, there were no hammer cages, so there was no hammer throwing going on. Right. And now that we've got our beautiful track, the track team has yet to come up with the money to buy a pole vaulting pit and the gear, which I think is like, what, 20, 30, 40 grand or whatever. So that must be a hindering factor in some of the schools that don't have the glue to be able to purchase pole vault equipment, but then, of course, cross-country running is still popular in the school.
Right, because they can just run pretty much anywhere, and that is pretty much the budget. You know, the pit itself is, about $20,000, and then each pole is between $400 and $600. So I've been very fortunate. The coach, Robert Tilley, who's an incredible pole vault coach and was my mentor, it still is my mentor, he was at this school, at Green Valley High School, for 20 years, and he would hold what he called a vault-a-thon every year. The kids would get sponsors for, you know, a dime or a dollar per inch, start a foot below their PR and vault, and then the sponsors would pay, and with that money, they would buy new poles every year. We probably have the best pole library in the state of Nevada at Green Valley High School. If we don't have 50 poles, I'd be surprised, which is very, very rare. But it's really essential. If you ever see a professional pole vaulter walk onto the field, he's not walking, or she is not walking onto the field with one pole. Each vaulter has a library of 3 to 10 poles, and you use a pole depending upon how you feel that day, the temperature. Maybe you're injured slightly. Maybe there's a headwind or a tailwind. So every single element of the environment within you and around you is going to change your experience that day. And with each change in the experience, you need to use a different pole. Because maybe you've got extra adrenaline. It's a special meet. You're going to run faster and put more energy into it. And you're going to go what we call, you're going to blow through a pole. You're going to be running too much and have too much energy for the pole, and you're just going to slam right into the bar because the pole is going to be too weak for you. And it may be a pole that is perfectly normal on a practice day, but because you have the extra energy, you have to move up another pole. So you go up maybe 5 or 10 pounds on a pole weight. And so you have to bring this library of poles. So if I have 20 vaulters and each of them have 3 or 4 poles, you're talking huge money. We share poles with other schools that don't have that library. We're happy to do so. And fortunately, Nevada is still doing pole vault, and it's very active and very popular. Other states in the United States don't have any pole vaulting. So we're fortunate to have it still in the state, and I'm fortunate to be linked up with this school that has had that kind of history of pole vaulting. And I continue to fill in all the holes, you know. So like on 11-foot poles, we may have 10 poles. 12-foot poles, another 15 poles. 13-foot poles, another, 10 or 15 poles. All different weights. And that's what's necessary to provide all the athletes with all the poles they might need for a particular competition.
Right. Now, you look like an ecto, like you're naturally long and lean. Am I right about that? Or do you have a fast metabolic rate?
Yes, is that what ecto means?
Yeah, there's in Sheldon's somatotyping, there's the meso, which is like Hercules, the endo, which is more corpulent and potential to gain fat. And then there's the ecto, like my son, he's 6'6", super lean, long back, long neck, long arms, and can't gain weight, just can eat and eat, eat, not gain weight. The reason I bring this up is because if you look at hammer throwers, like I look at the physiques, I always tell athletes, okay, like look at the best, they say the top 100 athletes in your sport. Look at their actual bodies. Now, do you have a body something like that? Because my perception is that the ideal body for a pole vaulter would not be massive and huge or gargantuan like a sort of a shot putter, because the mass you'd have to generate and lift would be disproportionate to the pole and I guess the physics. So and what I've seen in the pole vaulters is that they tend to be lanky and lean and very lithe and sinewy and very strong. Is that true?
Strength, yes. Tall helps. At the moment of takeoff, that angle of the pole is critical. So at takeoff, the taller you are, the easier it is to transfer that energy from the horizontal on the runway into that angular movement to get the pole up to vertical, which is your goal. So the taller you are, the better that angle, the higher you can hold on a pole compared to a shorter person. A shorter person can make up for it with greater speed and strength and great technique, what they call a free takeoff, where you jump off the ground before the pole tip hits the back of the box. But that's extra work compared to the guy that's 6'6 and can hold and he's holding his hand up at 8 feet. And this poor little gal that used to be a gymnast is holding her hand up, and it's at 6'6". You know, the tall guy has an advantage. And at the very top of the pole, too, if you've got longer arms, then you can push off the top of the pole a little further also. But in between, it's a little bit more of an advantage for a short person, I think, because you have to swing up. And that's why most gymnasts that are Olympic status are about 4 feet tall, it seems like, because they can spin easier than a tall person. I always give the analogy of the ice skater on the skating rink doing that pirouette spin, where they start to spin with their arms out, and then without adding any energy, they bring their arms in and cross them across their chest, and suddenly they're spinning about 800 times faster. And that's what a smaller vaulter can do in the air compared with a long, tall, skinny vaulter. So strength and height are an advantage for most of the vault.
Got it. Now, how I found you out, actually, is it's because you have the exact name as my son, Michael Hawley. Uh-huh. And I was Googling my son on Google to see if he's on Google. He's an IT engineer. And lo and behold, I found you. Oh, there's a guy with the same name. So then I found out that you were juggling and an entertainer, but that also this pole vault. But what really captivated my interest was this project you're involved with, the Secrets of the Champions. Your website is secretsofthechampions.com. So tell us about that and tell us about some of the things you've learned by studying some of these champions.
Well, I'm glad you found it. Because, and I'm glad that we're having this conversation, because hopefully more coaches and athletes that listen to your program will contact me, because I'd like to get more athletes for that project. Here's what happened. Years ago, I was playing tennis. I was watching, I think, Boris Becker on television. Watch him play in one of the great tournaments. Just inspired, motivated to go out and play some tennis. And I loved playing tennis. I went out to my court, I played tennis, and I was my normal mediocre tennis self. And I was thinking, well, what is he doing to be so good compared with me? And I answered my own question, and the answer was, I have no idea what Boris Becker actually does to practice to be great at something. So I thought that would be fun and interesting and valuable for people to know exactly what these people do. And I combine that with an irritation that I have experienced with a lot of people, even with teaching juggling, is they'll try it once and they'll drop the balls and they'll go, well, obviously I'm not good. And they'll never try it again. And somewhere along the line, we as humans develop that thought in our heads. And we weren't born with that thought for sure. In my juggling workshops now, I talk to the people about, I want you to practice today in our workshop like a great big baby. And they kind of laugh and they go, oh yeah, like screaming and whining and crying and all that. And I say, no, that's exactly the opposite of what I'm talking about. If you watch a baby learn to walk, that baby will never stop trying. It sees what it wants. It sees its parents or brothers and sisters walking. It says, I want to do that. And it pulls itself up on a leg or couch, a table chair leg or whatever it finds, and keeps trying and never cries, never says, I can't, and never says, forget it, I'm not going to learn how to do that. It has such a great attitude. And then somewhere along the line, we get another thought in our head that is far more powerful. And that thought is, well, if I don't get it on this first try, forget it. I'm never going to get it. And that's really frustrating. And so I wanted to combine those two concepts to make this website, this program, where people can tune in and watch what athletes do to realize that they practice tiny little elements every day, and they do it every day, and they don't give up, and they don't get frustrated, and they just keep going. And they do a lot of analysis, the video like we talked about before. They have a good coach there that can be an outside eye to give them help. And they keep going at it. And I think that's why I wanted to do this project, so that other people will get that thought out of their head, which is try it, fail, quit, and understand that it takes a long time. It takes correct action in order to do it well. And you're not born with it. Nobody's born with it. And you know, maybe you're born tall or you're born short or whatever a particular sport might give you an advantage in. But in general, you're not born with learning how to pole vault or throw the hammer or be a gymnast or anything. It takes a lot of smart planning and effort to succeed at it, and then you will. And I don't think people understand that. I'm reading a great book right now called Mastery by George Leonard. It was mentioned in John Cleese's autobiography, and it's a great book. I just started reading it yesterday, and it's fabulous. And it talks just about that, about how the practice is so essential. And just the concept of practice as a noun, of the amount of attention and focus and discipline you put into each moment in your practice, and intelligence that you put into each moment of your practice. That's why I wanted to do this program, the Secrets of the Champion, so people can tune in and say, wow, that's how it works. That's how it really works. They're not just born with it. They practice every single day.
Yeah, no, there's so much truth in what you said. You know, Yuri Sadiq was a national champion at 18, but he was, I guess, drafted into the army in Russia, and he was flown up to some training camp in Siberia where it was impossible to throw outside. So they fashioned a runway for him in the barrack, and he was never able to throw, but he was only for 2 years able to practice his turns. Now, you know how monotonous that would be, right? Just not being able to throw would be so frustrating. But having the discipline, and he has come up with, I guess you've maybe seen it on the in 86 when he set the world record. He's like technically unflawed. You know, it's beautiful to watch. And I've seen pole vaulters that are like that too. So absolutely, this passion, this desire, this unrelenting need to train, to make progress, to learn. These are the things that I think make the champions. And I agree with you 100% on what you said, Michael. It's just fantastic. Well, we're running out of time. We've reached our limit. It's just wonderful to have you being on the show. Thanks so much for donating your time and energy and what you're doing, Mike. It's really great.
Thank you, Corey. And it's always a pleasure. And I love to hear your experiences too. And if any of the people that listen to your program want to get in touch with me about the Secrets of the Champions project and would like to be an example in that, I'll travel to them and bring cameras and basically film them practicing and interview them too. And love to meet anybody that is interested in participating in that project.
Right on. Oh, that's excellent. I think I got some people in mind. Now, I'll ask you one last question as a final parting comment, maybe a bit of philosophy or whatever you like. What is it about your own life that you want to achieve before it comes to an end? And I'm talking about anything that you think is of absolute dire importance.
I think just to understand how it all works better, especially in today's world where we have so many distractions. I love coaching. I take 3 months off from work every year to stay home and work with these kids because I get to be so present, and that makes me feel more alive than anything else. Being on stage doing comedy and being present with these kids and focusing so intently upon the pole vaulting work. And it could be anything, but for me, it's pole vaulting. To better understand my life in that framework, to be present and be so into the moment and have more moments like that in my life.
Michael Hawley is a celebrity performer in Las Vegas. He's a juggler, a comedian, a pole vaulter, a pole vaulting coach, and truly committed to unraveling the mystery of what it takes to be a great champion, not just in athletics, but in life and the persistence of health and performance. So, Michael, we thank you very much for what you're doing, and we just wish you the very best.
Thanks, Corey, and to you too, and keep in touch. Come to Vegas and see my show.
Absolutely.
All right.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Represent his lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU. Sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life. Live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.